Hello, and welcome to Gen X, Y, and I, a conversation with three generations of positive people, featuring Real World R.
It is I.
Millennial Chris. Hey, wait, that's me. And not so silent Bob.
I am here, that's for sure.
We'll make you laugh, we'll make you think, and we'll always end on a happy note. This episode is brought to you in part by Breakwater Federal Credit Union in Houghton, Michigan. They have a special offer for our listeners. Come in for a consumer loan, mention this podcast, and they will waive the $100 processing fee. Limit one per person, membership required, and all loans are subject to credit approval. In today's episode, we're talking about the hardest job you've ever had.
But first, we should introduce our guests. That's our Gen Y. And it's Chris.
I'm a millennial.
Straight millennial. It's the voice that you hear on all of our intros. He is our producer of the show. And now he's on the other side of the mic. So
it's
welcome,
true,
Chris.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. We're excited to have you. Yeah. Wonderful. All right. So who wants to tackle this question first?
I mean, I can go first on this one.
All right.
Working in the arts in somewhere that's not one of the major centers is really hard.
Mm.
I have never had a circumstance in my career where I've had one job. I've always worked multiple jobs mm-hmm. in order to make things work. And even then, usually the jobs, you have to piece it together. You
sure.
really do. Mm-hmm. So like the first place I worked at, I was managing a venue for like the tech side of the venue for like $12 an hour.
Yikes.
Throughout my career in the arts is like I've been injured on the job. I've been nearly killed.
Jeez.
Talk to my wife about that one.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's just hurt a lot of my body in my mm-hmm. 20s. And now that I'm in my 30s, I'm reevaluating that because mm-hmm. I've not made much money, but I've done a lot.
Sure.
And I've really appreciated it. But not to be a Debbie Downer. Not to be a downer, but like,
see some cool things, experience yeah. some cool things, but still doesn't make the work hard easy, right?
No, it'd be yeah. one thing if I could just keep one job and one focus, but
right.
you know, even this, you know, I mm-hmm. work at an institution.
Mm-hmm.
I am doing podcasts on the sides. I'm designing microphones on the side. I'm doing field expeditions. Some of that's a little bit by choice because
yep.
the market is a little bit limited here and I have to try to expand out of the market.
Sure.
Mm. So you've got your fingers in lots of different things in order to make it work.
Mm-hmm. You have to piece it together.
Yeah.
So I do want to hear, you just recently went to one of our local treasures.
Oh, yes.
Isle Royal.
Mm-hmm.
How was that experience? Was there some challenges there for you?
There were some challenges. I think, you know, one of the
I guess maybe let's talk, tell the audience what you were doing. What was the goal?
So I was contracted by Isle Royal National Park to help them develop a digital soundscape program. So what they're looking
awesome.
At is... natural, man-made, just the sounds that you experience when you're in the park and to try to use those sounds as an interpretive tool online to help people who either can't go to the park experience it or just give people a sense of what they're getting into.
Okay. And so before you go into that, Chris, because
yeah.
he's just, Chris is so amazing in my opinion, because this was similar work when what he did as a student in Japan
mm-hmm.
and he just recorded sounds of Japan.
Yep.
All over the place. And I think all that stuff is digitally online someplace. Or
yeah,
no?
It is. So I started that process when I was a student at the Japan Center for Michigan Universities. And then mm-hmm. when I graduated from college, I did a Kickstarter to go back for 3 months to record more solo throughout the country.
It's so cool.
Wow, yeah. This is interesting. Yeah,
yeah,
I didn't know any of this. It's
yeah.
all new stuff.
That was a process.
Me.
So like, it was a lot shorter going on Isle Royale. It was a lot shorter than 3 months in Japan. But I also had to carry a lot of equipment and
yeah.
a lot of unknowns while I was on Isle Royale.
Okay. So that made it tough and challenging.
Yeah. I mean, anytime you deal with nature, I mean, mm-hmm. right now we're in a studio. We have a lot of control over
sure.
things. But when you're out in the world, you work to nature's time scale.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
good. And so what's the timeline for that project, or will people be able to hear that or experience that?
At some point, it's going to be up on the Park Service's website, the Isle Royale Park Service website.
Okay.
I think they're thinking winter, like 24, 25,
okay.
so pretty quick here. I'm not quite certain, though, as the form of the project may shift a little bit
All right.
with the material that I got for them.
Very good. Well, check him out, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
He does some really cool, great work. Chris Trevino, T-R-E-V-I-N-O. Did I spell it right?
Yes, you did.
Yes.
And the website's Chris A. Trevino because
Chris Trevino is taken by a tattoo artist in Texas.
Which would be a cool alternative job, too.
Yeah.
All right, Bob, what about you?
This wasn't that hard for me to think about. I mean, basically, the thing I went to right away was my experience in the military, in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And I was drafted, so I mean, it's not like I volunteered or anything.
Can I go back? Because I just wonder, I mean, that's something that not so much my generation or Chris's generation that we had to experience. So like, what was it like? Was there a fear associated to being drafted? Or
you
what?
Bet.
Uh-huh.
You bet. Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a drawing, I mean, and at that time. So they basically, if you won, you got drafted. And that's why when I got drafted, I was basically, I had like 1 year and I would be too old.
Mm.
So I always talk about that experience in the Army as growing down. I mean, even though I'm silent generation,
yeah,
I associated always with baby boomers.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So that was my experience. But and I was not in good shape. Probably a little overweight,
mm-hmm.
and going through basic training in Fort Leonard Wood in the summertime. And then it was even worse. I mean, if I didn't have that experience, I would have probably died.
Mm.
But after that experience, you build up a little bit of body, you know, resistance and ability to do stuff. Then doing infantry AIT at Fort Polk, Louisiana. At that time, they called it Tigerland because those people were all going to Vietnam, mm-hmm. And that's where I thought I was going to end up. God didn't have that plan for me, and I'm thanking God to this day for that.
Mm-hmm.
But Tigerland, maybe you don't know why it was called Tigerland. Whenever you moved from one building to another, in other words, when you went outside, you had to have full gear on, which was heavy because it was a gun, it was a rifle, it was mm-hmm. a backpack and everything, and you had to double time. And this was Fort Polk, Louisiana. It's in the swamp. I mean, it's
hot. When you say double time, I don't know what that means.
You had to run.
Ooh, real.
You had to run. No walking.
Okay. Yep.
And you had to growl.
Oh.
What?
That's how it got called, yep. Tigerland. Yeah.
So you growled and you double time the whole time?
Yeah, growl double time and run to the next place. So
it was,
and the experience is, well, you probably have some conception in your head of maybe what Marine training is like. Mm-hmm. It's both heavy duty stuff. Infantry training is also very heavy duty stuff. It's probably very close. I can't say for sure because I don't know all the mm-hmm. details, but I'm guessing it's probably very close to what I'm kind of thinking, what you might be thinking about Marine training.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was in the best shape I was ever in.
Sure.
And it turned out to be a good experience. I know a lot of the people that I was, because I was the oldest one almost everywhere I went.
Mm-hmm.
Most people had the attitude, the ones who were drafted, this is 2 years out of my life. I'm just going to, whatever, I'm just going to kind of wing it as much as I can, get as little out of it as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept thinking to myself, you know what? I was 24 years old or something like that at that time. I said, I can't give up 2 years of my life. So I did everything I could to get more out of it.
Okay. Yeah.
And it turned out,
it turned out
really good for me in the end, I think.
Were you married at that time? Or that
no.
Was, okay.
No, not at all.
Okay.
We were friendly by that time. So uh-huh. we were writing, she was writing to me and her okay. mom was writing to me. And
nice.
So I would get her perspective and then her mother's perspective. And they were fighting. And so I'd get these two letters.
That kept things exciting
yeah.
for you.
Yeah.
So 2 years out of your life.
2 years out of my life, but they were good years.
Nice.
And I benefited from them.
Okay. Okay, so mine is, I talked on a previous episode about one of the best aspects of my life that's meaningful in my life is working with young people, 12 to 18. But I had a one-year season of my life, and I don't know if I maybe talked about this before on a previous season, but I worked at a medium security lockup facility for adjudicated youth. People called them, what do they call them? I don't know, there's another name for them. But I always said they were just young people that got in trouble and got caught. So this was like they were in a full-time live-in facility where they were in a program that was supposed to like rehabilitate them, and then they had visitations with their family. But oh my gosh, my role was youth support director. And so every time a new resident came to the campus, they literally, I facilitated their group counseling in a sense. And so every time a new person came on the cottage, they had to give their whole life story. And I mean, there were times where we were restraining young people, like people were aggressive. And so they had to travel in with their group. It was like, for me, one of the hardest jobs that I've ever had, because it was just like wild cards. I never knew what kind of person was coming. And so we dealt with all kinds of, you know, challenges in the experiences, but like literally having to restrain young people because they were just out of control was crazy. It also gave me a lot of empathy for that generation of young people, of what they were going through, what the challenges were of some of the most disadvantaged young people just living in the streets, or, you know, being disowned or abused and all of that kind of stuff. And so I was hearing that, seeing that, living that. And I mean, there was one time I was just like working and I was walking through the campus and I was just like, God, just deliver me from this wilderness. It really felt like a 1-year wilderness experience, but it was eye-opening because it really gave me a lot of empathy for what young people, you know, what the challenges are for the generation. That was almost, you know, 15, 20 years ago that I had that experience. So
that's kind of how you set your vision then to what you wanted to do with your life.
But everything that I've ever done has been young people, but it really gave me a lot of compassion and mm-hmm. empathy. And, you know, people always see the bad aspects, but you just don't know what, you know, the day to day and what young people were going through. So it was very eye-opening. I learned a whole lot in that 1 year. And also that is the place where I met my husband. So that's where Derek and I worked as co-workers 20 years ago. So there were benefits that happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I learned a lot about myself, but also just learning a lot about what young people were going through or challenges that they were facing at that time. So
wow.
Wilderness, I would call it a wilderness experience, but it was also one of the places that I learned a lot.
And probably thank God that where you ended up and the way you were, you didn't have to deal with those issues that you saw other people.
It gives you perspective of, man, I'm grateful and thankful that I had a loving family, even though I was raised by my mother and my grandmother.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have definitely some perspective on what I was shielded from, protected from, and mm-hmm. didn't have to deal with. So for sure. Yeah.
Well, that was interesting. I guess this should, are we done?
That's a heavy note to end on.
It's a heavy note. What's the happy note? We're supposed to end on a happy note, Bob. What would you say?
Why don't you go ahead and do one of those jingles?
No, I'm not doing a jingle. I'm not ending this episode on a jingle. We'll just end it with laughter. I mean, we survive.
Yes.
We're still standing. We live
we
to talk about, you know, tough things. And I think that
and we all learn from them.
You learn.
And that's the biggest thing.
We grew.
And adapt.
Yeah.
There's a lot of terrible things that can happen to us, but those terrible things can become our greatest strengths.
Absolutely.
That's right. That's right.
If we allow them.
Whatever you could survive makes you stronger.
That's your happy note.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. If you have any suggestions you'd like us to discuss, you can email us at genxyandi@gmail.com. Also, let us know what you think of the episodes. We love hearing from you. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, X, Apple Podcast, Audioboom, or your podcast platform of choice. Thanks again to our wonderful sponsors, REO Acoustics, Upper Peninsula Audiology, and Breakwater Federal Credit Union.